Good afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon. Hi to my everyone.
Hey, today we're going to be talking about parasitic plants.
We are. And, of course, we've got the plant of the week in there. And we're also going to talk about an upcoming event. We're going to touch on that, which is
Mother's Day.
Yay to all the mums out there. So I guess we'll crack into it because I feel like there's a lot of substance in today's show, eh?
Yeah.
I've got that feeling.
Yeah.
Definitely at my end anyway.
Well,
brace yourself, Selena.
Okay, because I don't really know that much about parasitic
You are going to learn all about them. So a parasitic plant is defined as a plant that derives some or all of its nutritional requirement from another living plant. So a bit like a baby and a mother. And my mother would say, you mean for the entire lifetime? Or
okay.
Exactly. Clip the wings. So they make up about 1% of flowering plants, also known as angiosperms. Did you know that angiosperms?
I'm trying to go back to when I learned botany.
Yeah. And are found in almost every biome. There are approximately, how many species do you reckon of parasitic plant would there be? Hazard a guess.
How many species?
Hundreds, thousands, hundreds of thousands. What do you reckon?
Thousands?
Yes. 4,500 approximately.
Okay.
That's quite a lot. It's a lot more than I would have.
Yeah.
Because this isn't... I only know of one parasitic plant. Do you know... Two.
Well, I know mistletoe.
Mistletoe. And there was one I was going to mention at the end, but I'm actually going to mention it now because I'd heard of it. The Rafflesia.
Yeah.
Rafflesia anoldi.
Is that that flower that smells really bad?
Yes. And it's like, it's up to a metre in diameter. It's one of the largest, if not the largest flower ever.
It's like the one, that's an arum lily. I'm thinking of the one in the Auckland winter gardens.
That is a parasitic plant. So I believe it is a root parasite. It's got no green on it, which makes it a hollow parasitic plant, which means it derives all of its fixed carbon from a host plant, lacks chlorophyll.
So do parasitic plants all lack chlorophyll? Is that what you're saying?
No, I was going to get to that. Great question, Selena. There's actually three classifications. So every parasitic plant is, like any plant, is classified. So your mistletoe is classified as an obligate stem hemiparasite. Obligate meaning the parasite cannot complete its life cycle without the host.
Okay.
Stem meaning it attaches to the host's stem.
Yes.
And hemiparasitic meaning that it lives as a parasite under natural conditions but remains photosynthetic to at least some degree. So your mistletoe's still got some green in there.
Okay.
So it's not, yeah.
I'm thinking.
Whereas compared to that smelly one.
Yeah. Totally.
No green.
Nothing.
It gets all its carbon, which is, I taught you guys about photosynthesis and the production of carbohydrates and carbon.
We will,
There
will be an episode on that, definitely.
Coming. Sorry, we swapped around. That's coming, but you'll learn all about that. But, yeah, it's all to do with the manufacture of carbon, which
is
a part of the carbohydrate
chain. So they don't
chain.
Want to manufacture their own carbon. They're trying to get it from...
They're getting some from carbon dioxide in the air.
Oh, true, yes.
And some from where they suck into the stem. Now, all parasitic plants have modified roots called haustoria. Haustoria? H-A-U-S-T-O-R-I-R. Haustoria.
Okay.
These specialised roots penetrate the host plant, enabling them to extract water and other nutrients from its host. So that's what makes them parasitic, this haustoria.
So imagine that a plant, instead of growing in the soil, it just grows on the...
It just latches on.
Stem or...
Like a leech. With these specialised roots.
It's not the same as a bromeliad, which sort of lives in the crooks of branches and trees, would you say?
Oh, I wonder if that's a... I'm going to have a quick look at that. How do you spell that? B-R-O...
B-R-O-M-E-L-I-A-D. Bromeliad.
Bromeliad parasite.
Because they do have green, well, chlorophyll. Well, not all of them do. They have, some of them have red, I suppose you'd call them leaves, but they look like a vase.
Don't know. I'm going to have to, I'll come back to you on okay. that. It's not jumping out at me straight away as to... they are epiphytic and cling to trees or other structures.
They're epiphytic.
They are not parasitic, but simply use... there we go, to answer your question, but simply use the structure as perches.
Okay, so
there you go.
Staying, they're not sucking goodness out of the
they're
trees.
Just using it as a structure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So to be a parasite, you are actually depending...
Yes. To some degree. Some more than others.
Yeah.
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 Some parasitic plants are generalists and parasitise many species, even several different species at once.
What? Okay.
By contrast, there is evidence that some parasites practice what is called self-discrimination. The species of Trifusaria, for instance, experience reduced haustorium, so that's reduced clinging of the modified roots to...
Yeah.
Reduced haustorium development in the presence of other Trifusaria.
So, would those strangler figs, you know, those strangler figs that they climb up the host plant and then strangle life out of it and then the host dies?
Oh, yeah.
Is that an example of a parasitic plant?
I don't know. I'm sure that there would be mistletoe clings onto, and I've seen it, where the end of the plant basically drops off because it's, yeah. But I don't know. Lots of good questions today.
They do eventually kill what they
do. I think that strangulation is a different thing.
Although they're not sucking it out.
Well, this is actually, I've just up to the next topic, which is evolution of parasitism.
Okay.
Or plant parasitism, I should say. The evolutionary event which gave rise to parasitism in plants was the development of their, as we talked about, haustoria. To maximise resources, many parasitic plants have evolved self-incompatibility to avoid parasitising themselves.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's crazy.
Crazy plants.
So...
are they bad?
Maybe they... I was thinking of what you were saying about them killing their host plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they wouldn't do it to them. They wouldn't wrap it onto their own limbs.
Yeah, strangle themselves. No.
But maybe they'd be quite happy to do it. Which brings me, there's another topic down the end about that. I've called this topic the parasitic problem. That's the title I've given it.
Oh, okay.
Which will come back to... align with your question a bit there.
Oh, okay.
But no, it was more to do with the root parasite plants.
Oh, right.
Than the stem.
Yeah, it's growing into other plants.
So big problem.
Are these plants bad? Like, are they like pest plants, would you say?
Shall we just get into that now? I feel you're super interested. It's really
scary.
Important. So the witchweed species is one such problem parasite. It's estimated to cost billions of dollars a year in grass and grain yield loss annually. I've already said year. infesting over 50 million hectares of cultivated land within sub-Saharan Africa alone.
Oh, do we have it here?
I haven't heard of it.
Oh,
But it attaches to the roots of the host and then just basically saps the living life out of them. So that's interesting, that word you were talking about. This one is called a striger, striger. So it's part of the striger, species.
Oh.
Does that sound a bit like the one you were talking about?
No, I was thinking of the strangler fig.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Then you have the Aurobanchaceae species, and these are considered the most, one of the most destructive species on Earth, threatening a wide range of important crops, including corn, rice, peas, tomatoes, carrots, lettuce, and brassicas. Yield loss from Aurobanchaceae, I'm just going to call it the Aurobanch family, can reach 100%, so it can destroy your entire crop.
Oh,
and has caused some farmers in some regions of the world to abandon certain staple crops altogether and just start importing.
Really?
Because it's that bad. Much research has been devoted to the control of this species, this and the Striga species, though no method as yet has been found to be entirely successful. So this is a little bit concerning.
Gosh.
I'll show you a picture. That's what it looks like. There's a just a...
Those plants look really close together, that the parasite plant's roots are growing into the...
The roots, yeah, so it's that white piece in the middle of the roots. So it's not entirely, goodness. It's all happening underground.
Oh, okay, so it's not attached to, like, the top part of the plant.
Yeah.
Growing sort of right.
So there's a whiter part in amongst all the roots, and that's the,
what they call
the witchweed.
They're too close together.
And so, yeah, so it's not obvious, and then your crop starts dying, and
what's happening?
Got no nutrition, and...
That's why we space plants out a bit, so they're not competing with each other.
Well, that brings me on to the next part of the discussion, which is seed germination of these parasite plants and how they operate. It's quite interesting, so that's why I wanted to talk about that.
Plants.
So there's either, they can do it by either chemical mechanism or mechanical mechanism. So chemical compound cues released into the surrounding soil by the host plant roots are sensed by the parasitic plant seeds within close proximity.
Oh.
So your idea of spacing could well be, maybe they've looked into that research-wise.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. Yeah. Parasitic plants germinate and follow the concentration gradient of these compounds towards the host plant. These compounds are called striga lactones, which are where I think the striga family comes from, or species, and they stimulate ethylene biosynthesis in seeds, causing them to germinate. Witchweed seeds, which is one of the problem ones, witchweed, uses chemical means for seed germination. They need to be within 3 to 4 millimetres of its host to receive chemical signals in the soil to trigger germination. This range is critical because the plant will only grow about 4 millimetres after germination. So that could definitely be something worth investigating.
That sounds a bit like, you know, the cuckoos who they lay their eggs in other birds' nests, and then the cuckoos grow to be like, well, the host mother thinks it's their.
Yeah.
Their bird, but
and
it's
then
not.
Gives them all the food.
And they kick out the other baby bird, the hatchling.
Oh, the hatchling does.
Yeah.
The hatchling knows. Oh.
No.
Get out of here.
The cuckoo.
The mum that planted the egg kicks the other eggs out.
Yes.
I have heard of that.
Yeah. I think that's the way it. That's scary.
You see how this all ties into Mother's Day? I'll give you a little rundown of some mechanical seed germination. So stem parasitic plants, like your mistletoe, unlike most root parasites, germinate using the resources inside their endosperms, which is a part of their seed, and they are able to survive for some time. For example, the dodders drop their seeds to the ground and may remain dormant for up to 5 years before they find a host plant. And once germinated, the plant has 6 days to find and establish a connection with its host plant before its resources become exhausted.
You know what this reminds me of, Karen? Plants versus zombies.
Oh. I know, it's nuts. I wrote something somewhere about Oh, was it in my fun facts section?
If you haven't played that video game or read
the comic books, I have.
Oh, it's so hilarious.
Oh, this one here. This is So Plants versus Zombies. The Western Australia Christmas tree, this is in my fun facts section,
yes,
sometimes damages underground cables, like power cables, because it mistakes the cables for host roots and tries to parasitize them using its strong fibrous cellular guillotine.
Oh. Crazy.
Anyway, let's hear what your... beautiful plan of the week is, shall we?
Well,
and if we've got time at the end, I've got a few more fun facts about parasite plants.
Let's do it.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and a nun.
There you go. Unlike your... set of plants you're talking about, Karen. This plant is deemed as a tree for solving global problems.
All right.
And the United Nations have voted it the tree of the 21st century.
Oh, well done.
Congratulations. The award goes to Neem Tree. Neem tree. So
I've always wanted to know more about this tree because I use this product a lot in my gardening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it is a remarkable tree. Why? Well, it originally comes from India.
Yes, I knew. I was going to say that.
Oh, well.
I just had a feeling.
Yeah.
Sounds Indian.
Yeah. In that country, it is a well-loved tree because it... Basically, it's a living pharmaceutical, you know. It's anti-malarial, antifungal, anti-inflammatory, antibacterial. So the leaves and all the roots and the flowers and the twigs, everything can be used because it contains, it contains 135 different chemical compounds scientists have found in it that worked all together to remarkably be, anti everything.
Don't forget insecticidal? Anti-insect.
Anti-insect. Well, it's a great insect repellent.
Mm.
So they were using everything in their medicine for hygiene and just everything.
They use it in soaps. They use it in like underarm.
Yeah.
Deodorants.
Yeah.
I've seen it used like, because I do a bit of shopping on natural health like sites, and you see it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Used there and stuff. I don't generally go for it myself just because I find the smell quite.
It's quite garlicky.
Like it. Yeah.
But that's part of why it's so effective, because insects don't like it.
Yeah.
And I'll explain more about how it works, the compounds in it that makes it such a great, anti-insect repellent, deterrent. I actually have used the oil from it, that's in my hair.
Oh, yes.
It's very good, and it just got rid of them all. So, and the good thing about the neem tree is it's not a chemical, like it's not toxic to humans or animals except for those sap-sucking insects.
It is a little bit toxic to bees, though. Like if you spray it on your plants,
Because it's an oil, any insect, like, it's a barrier to stop the insect from moving.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it can be harmful to those insects.
So when they say to apply, they say to do it not during the middle of the day when all the bees are buzzing around and all that.
Yeah.
If you're using it on your plants.
But it's actually not a poison. It works by stopping, like, the insect's hormone cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then all those plant eating insects that are basically parasites sucking, chewing your plants up, it'll bite the plant and then say, oh, this tastes horrible. Mm. So then they kind of leave it alone.
Right. So it's more of a taste thing than a
thing. Yeah. Yeah. And then they start starving, and then they can't reproduce because it stops that, because it interferes with their hormones.
Oh, yeah. And then, I think is it the endocrine system? Is that the one?
Yeah. And so that is a way more effective way to control insect populations than just killing them outright.
Doesn't affect our endocrine system.
No, it's not for
it's just for
just the for animal. Those insects up. Sap sucking insects.
Do we use it more externally as a product?
Yeah, well, we don't eat it, right. But if you ingest it, it's not going to harm you.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wouldn't eat a lot of it. It probably doesn't taste that great.
Okay, good to know.
Okay, so it's a wonderful substance, the neem. To use in the garden to help control all those, parasitic
insects. I find it really good with aphids.
Yeah. Aphids, white fly, scale, mealybug, coupling moths.
Thrips. Get into the different types of neem products that you can use on your garden?
Yes.
Because there are... Because I bought like 4 litres of it once, which was really too much for my size garden. I mean, I think that was more for like maybe a horticultural size establishment, you know what I mean? Okay. So I was like, I need to ring the company out that I purchased this from because I wondered why it wasn't working as effectively. But it turns out there was a particularly bad aphid season and like everyone was having problems. But the first thing the guy said to me was, what kind of neem product is it?
Or you can get it in granules, which I prefer to use because you can just toss those around in your garden. And what happens with the plants is they absorb the neem in it, and then that serves as the it makes the plant taste not nice for the insects, and so it's a much better way.
You'll sprinkle it on the
on the ground in the root zone.
Yeah.
And then it helps strengthen the plant that you're wanting to protect.
Even the liquid products, there's different kinds of.
So there's oils.
Some of them are
that you would use as a spray.
There's different categories of oils as well. And he said they all act differently and not entirely differently, but some are got surfactants in them, which are he was asking me to specify which particular.
Mean the brands of oil, so you probably want pure
not so much
oil.
It was how they were made, and I had and so some were emulsified differently, and because of that he said the one that I chose, thank goodness, was one that didn't break down too quickly. So even though it was way past the expiry date, it was still good to use, which was great for me because I had heaps of it in my garage. But but others were more prone to breaking down more easily and had different sort of applications. And I had no idea. I might bring that up next time. It was. So when you're buying a neem product, just something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I'll just talk about the plant itself.
Yes.
Can we grow it here? Well, because it grows in India, it prefers the tropical climate because it doesn't really like the cold.
Mm.
But you could try growing it.
Is like a tree?
It's a tree.
Like a good sized...
It's a tree. So in India they use it as a street tree. It's a nice... It's got those leaves that look a bit like wisteria ones where they're like different, it looks like a... How do you call it? Pinnate.
Little leaves.
Little leaves.
Yeah.
And the leaves are used like they make it into powders, which is your neem preparations.
Okay.
And you can also use, the seeds and the... And everything.
So they dry them and
they
ground
dried
them
it
up.
And ground them up. And then the seeds, they use them as the oil. So they crush up the seeds and you get your oil from them.
So the one you're using in your garden would be from the leaves?
The granules, I think they're from the leaves. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So they make them into granules. But the oil is from, the seed oil.
See, maybe that's where I'm going a bit with the whole, what the guy was trying to, that different production, different parts.
Yeah. Depends on what you're really wanting to use it for. And I think how bad your infestation is. So this tree grows, as I said, in India, but tends to grow in the dry coastal areas in deep sandy soils. It's actually become a bit of a pest in Australia, would you believe?
Oh, okay.
And they've tried to make an industry like using, because people in the West didn't really know about it. It was India's tree. And then they found out it had all these uses, which the Indians have been using for like centuries. But everyone else had been using chemicals without success. But neem has like totally trumped the whole chemical manufacturing because it's so effective. It's not a poison. It just interrupts that feeding cycle of insects. I would say you'd call it like a birth control, like say you're on the pill and that's how it stops the population rather than like killing everybody.
Yeah, rather than mass execution.
So that's why the United Nations has called it like the tree of the 21st century. Because it's got so many applications to use it. It's natural, it grows.
That's so cool.
It's easy to grow in, in Australia where it's all dry and hot.
I wonder how it would go against some of those parasitic... Might make them thrive even more. I don't know. I was thinking not parasitic insects, I was thinking parasitic plants.
Probably the plants wouldn't have a chance because they might not, that might not like growing near the neem tree. Because, it would have those chemical compounds in it that would stop it from, I don't know, it wouldn't just...
It sounds like there's lots to be discovered about this plant.
More research is being done. Scientists are investigating. It's such a wonderful plant that is very useful
and
for us.
And the fact that it grows so easily is
for
always
us gardeners.
A bonus.
So when you have a problem with too much of something, like, insects that are sucking your plants, then the first thing might be to look into neem. Or we call it just neeming your plants, which is giving it the neem treatment.
For sure. That's my go-to
now. It's not expensive and it's natural. It's organic.
The other thing is, if you are using it, though, and you're in direct sunlight, maybe not, I don't know if it's just for fair-skinned people, but you're supposed to not go out and direct... It's like, when you have some antibiotics and the label says, don't go out into the sun. I read that on the label of mine as well. So I just do it at the end of the day when it's not bright.
You don't have to...
Read the directions carefully, guys, because at the end of the day, sounds like quite a potent...
You don't use it like you would use a chemical spray. You'd use it as a preventative. It repels all those baddies, those parasitic bugs. And then, I guess that ties into our parasitic plants.
Yes. So, did you want to mention something about the upcoming?
Mother's Day. All the mothers out there, that is your day to celebrate. We can say we've been talking about parasites.
Oh, I thought you had some event or something that you wanted to mention.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then just buy your mum some flowers. I'm thinking about getting my mum some flowers for Mother's Day.
Yeah. A nice pot plant or orchids or something.
I'm going to go even better. I'm going to get her a big bag of horse poo. I went down to the pony club during the school holidays and got some. So, she's the kind of mum that would appreciate that.
All right, everyone. Happy gardening and don't be a parasite.
See you later, guys.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.